Good afternoon. We'd like to get started on time. We have a lot of people joining us on the web today. Thank you very much, Mr. Dealey. So we'd like to begin at 12:30 sharp because, as I said, we have people watching us from their offices. The unfortunate people who couldn't take the opportunity to walk across campus today, and what a beautiful day we have for our talk. Good afternoon. My name is Robin Wiltshire. I'm one of the co-chairs of the Campus Community Committee. I always slow down and take a deep breath before I say those three words because they do fall over each other. I'd like to welcome you all to this, our 12th in the Lunch and Learn series. This is one of the events that the campus community put on to bring members of the McGill community together, and it's a pleasure to see so many of you out today. And to thank Professor McDally for coming in and talking to us today. It'll be a very interesting talk, I'm sure, and for hanging the flag and all, and wearing his royal tie and everything else that goes with it. So our committee's been working together to put on events such as the one we're organizing today, to bring the community together. It's a committee of volunteer faculty, staff, and students and retirees. We're always looking to broaden our committee membership, and if anyone would like to join us, you can get in touch with me or Mira Turk following the talk today. We'd be happy to welcome you to join us. We're very pleased to see such a great turnout. Professor McNally will take questions at the end, and if you could just remember to turn on the microphone when you ask a question so it's picked up on our webcast, and remember to turn off the microphone after so we don't hear any of the other things that you say as you go along. And if you could please also turn off your cell phones. Those are picked up by the recording, and it can be quite a nuisance. So we're very pleased to welcome Professor McNally, who tells me he came to McGill for a one-year degree. And then after getting the degree and after a number, anyway, he never left. That's the story, and I think that's the story with so many of us who come to McGill just for a short period of time. The institution, the city, and the people, and our community just gets a hold of you and doesn't let you leave afterwards. Professor McNally is a professor in the School of Information Studies, and he's the director of the History of McGill Project. He's currently writing McGill University for the Advancement of Learning, Volume 3, and that covers the years from 1970 to 2002. So I guess there'll be another edition after this one. In addition to his writings on McGill, he's published extensively on the history of Canadian books, printing, and libraries, and he's past president of the Bibliographical Society of Canada. He's also convener of the Library History Interest Group of the Canadian Library Association. In 2002, he received the Distinguished Service Award of the McGill Alumni Association. His interest in the royal family apparently began at a very early age, and he's been collecting royal memorabilia for a number of years, compiling scrapbooks on royal events and weddings, tours of Canada and such, and his extensive collection has been displayed in numerous exhibitions, including here on campus in the McLennan and Redpath Libraries and in the office of the Lieutenant Governor of Quebec. He's an ardent royal watcher, and among other occasions, visiting London in 1981 for the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer. Are you going for this one?
Yes.
Of course he is. Of course he is. His interviews on television and radio about the royals have been seen and heard by many, and in 2002 he received the Queen's Golden Jubilee Medal. Professor McNally will tell us today about the upcoming wedding, William and Kate's big day, compare their wedding to previous royal nuptials, and help us to better understand what's with the public fascination with the royal monarchy, even here in the colonies.
Can you hear me? Very good. Thank you very much, Robin Wiltshire, Mira Turk, for organizing today and to the campus community committee. And now that you've all seen that I own a jacket, I'm going to take it off. I build up an awful lot of body heat when I talk, and the other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to undo my tie ever so slightly, but that's as far as it goes, don't worry. So, you're all here today. If anybody else comes in, I think there are a few more seats over to one side, and you all want to know about the royal family, and all looking out here, I'm sure there are more than a few people who'd like to be either a princess or maybe even a prince, and maybe we'd even prepare to settle for attending a royal wedding of one sort or another. And remember, it's happening in less than 2 weeks. It's happening 2 weeks from Friday on the 29th, and we're almost there. But before going any further, I'd like to ask you a question. Now, think about this very much, because you're going to have to respond. You know, we got a little dial-a-meter up here, so we're going to register what the reaction is going to be. Now, there are two questions. Now, the first question is, and basically it's all a question of what you would prefer watching on television or attending. Now, the first question is, would you prefer to watch the leaders' debates tomorrow night and Wednesday? The second question is, would you prefer to attend the royal wedding? Now, those of you who would prefer to watch the leaders' debate tomorrow night and Wednesday, you clap. All right. Those of you who would prefer to attend the royal wedding. Well, I rest my case. Of course, the question was asked to me, is anybody interested in the royal family and royal events? There's absolutely no doubt about it whatsoever. And I've spent my whole life watching these things. As Robin mentioned, I began collecting at a very early age. The first piece I ever got was something my mother gave me when I was a very, very small boy. It was a small silver spoon she had won at a ball she attended in 1937, the night of the coronation of King George VI and Queen Elizabeth. And so she knew I was interested in the royal family, so she gave it to me. And with my family, I certainly went around watching any number of royal events when members of the royal family visited Canada. Now, there are all sorts of royal events, aren't there? There are coronations. Many of you will remember, not all of you, but some of you at least will remember the coronation of 53. And then, of course, in the future, there's going to be the coronation of King Charles III. Funerals. The funeral of the Queen Mother back in 02 was remarkable. And somebody once at that time said to me, this is probably the most spectacular funeral we will ever see, to which I reply, it will be nothing compared to the Queen's funeral. Not that we're looking forward to it, but hey, you know, if you're into this kind of thing, you're into it. The Jubilees, many of us remember the Queen's silver jubilees, her 25th and 50th anniversary, silver and gold, and then next year there's going to be the Diamond Jubilee. Significant birthdays. Remember the Queen Mother, her 80th, her 90th, her 100th birthday celebrations. Royal tours of Canada. The Queen, between 1951 and 2010, every two or three years she comes to Canada. And then there are royal events such as the opening of the St. Lawrence Seaway, when the Queen was in Ottawa in 81 for the signing of the Constitution, royal births, Prince William, Prince Harry, and all of these events generate enormous interest. There are television programs, newspaper articles, magazine articles, commemorative events of one sort or another. They attract crowds, and there's always a huge buzz about it. Now, for many people, of course, this buzz just comes and goes, but not for some of us. And some of us are avid watchers and collectors of this sort of thing. And I would make the analogy some people define themselves as being Kremlin watchers, Vatican watchers, White House watchers, Parliament Hill watchers, you know, all sorts of things of this sort. I'm a palace watcher. What can I tell you? I watch the palace. I watch the websites. I read the magazines and the articles. You know, every now and then, you know, people get into serious questions, discussions about publishing magazines. And is there a future for magazines and Canadian magazines? And which magazines do you subscribe to? And, of course, I always have to say, well, the only magazines I ever subscribe to are those dealing with the royal family. And but I do read an awful lot professionally as well, too, I should add. But that's why we have libraries, and so I read them there. Now, royal weddings are particularly popular, and they're dazzling. People love a royal wedding. And the question is, well, why do people like royal weddings? What is there about a royal wedding? Well, you can see, I put together a little slideshow for us here. Quite apart from the fact that it was an interesting book, you'll notice in the upper right-hand corner two little historical artifacts. First of all, W.H. Smith. W.H. Smith doesn't exist anymore, and at least not in Canada. And also, the book cost only $18.95. Can you imagine? There was a time when, eh? And so therefore the question is, well, why royal weddings? What is there about a royal wedding that always seems to attract people's attention above and beyond coronations and all these other great events, it seems? And I've been thinking about this, and I think, well, first of all, there's this elemental part of it. It's human dimension. It's happy, youthful, and joyful. It's about the future and regeneration. It's a dynastic, the hereditary function of monarchy, family, children, new generation. And of course, weddings are always spectacular. Everybody is always well-dressed at them, aren't they? First of all, you have a bride, and she's always well-dressed. Has anybody read the biography, the autobiography of Deborah, the Dowager Duchess of Devonshire? She's the last of the Mitford sisters. And there's this wonderful little anecdote she tells in it. Growing up as one of six daughters, her mother had quite a time keeping them all in order, and they had a maid, and with a maid, and if the girls got out of hand, the maid would just say to the girls, "Now stop acting like that because nobody cares and nobody pays any attention to you." And she said that was just fine until the day of her sister Diana's wedding, and there Diana was all dressed up, looking absolutely spectacularly beautiful in this fabulous gown, and she started fussing a little bit with her veil. And the maid said, "Now, Diana, stop that. After all, nobody's going to be paying any attention to you." Well, as we know, brides, people pay attention to them. Even the men get well-dressed up oftentimes in tuxedos or morning dress. And we know at this wedding there are going to be lots and lots of uniforms as well and orders of this sort. And, of course, some spectacular jewelry. It's a public show. There are presents. There are celebrations. There are going to be street parties. Food and drink. There are going to be probably a fireworks display the night before, etc., etc. And then, of course, there's this whole constitutional dimension. This is our future king and queen we're talking about. Now, royal weddings, of course, historically, were usually very private affairs, and they were conducted in public as a rule. People knew about them. There'd be celebrations, but nobody really saw much of them. But you can see great public interest in them, and certainly Queen Victoria's wedding certainly raised enormous public interest. And of course, she's the one who began the fashion of brides wearing white. Up until that time, that was not taken for granted. In the 20th century, royal weddings have become great public events. It was after World War I that Westminster Abbey became the focus. And then we'll remember the marriage of the wedding of Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer at St. Paul's, chosen because it was larger. Public displays, processions, carriages, crowds, media, television, live streaming, all of this is going to happen. And, of course, this is part not just of the British royal tradition, but it's become a very European thing. Last year, some of you may have seen, for instance, the wedding of the Crown Princess of Sweden, Princess Victoria. It was a spectacular thing in the middle of what's the capital of Sweden is... Stockholm, thank you. I can't remember everything. This coming July, Prince Albert of Monaco is getting married. That will be a big event as well, too. And stop and think about this. It's rather intriguing that all this should be happening in an age when marriage is something which is being questioned and even under attack. The apathy towards marriage here in Quebec, 50% of couples, it would seem, are unmarried. And there's great debate for and against marriage, but yet here we all are, utterly focused upon this wedding. And the question is, why is this? And I guess I would have to admit at the end, I'm probably better at posing the question than I am really at answering it, because it is one of those great mysteries and dilemmas. But I think instead what we should do is just focus upon the fact of this couple and everything that goes along with it. Now, you'll notice here, I have these two flags, Kate and William flags, with their images in the middle of Union Jacks. And this is just a small beginning of the range of things which are available. It's absolutely remarkable. And of course, let's think of, when you talk about a royal wedding, and particularly of these two young people. Remember, there are two sets of parents, and then of course the extended families. The fact that Prince William's grandmother is the queen, and that he is second in line to the throne. There are siblings, his brother Prince Henry, who will be his best man. The royal relatives, other members of the royal family, both from Britain and across Europe, who will be there. Then the wedding list, who was invited and not invited. Fergie is not invited. David Johnson, our former principal and current governor general, is invited. Mr. Harper was invited, but he's not going. He decided that that fighting an election was more important than attending a royal wedding. If I were in Mr. Harper's position, well, I'd have to think about it. There's going to be a wonderful ceremony, the processions, the carriages, the Abbey service. All of this is going to be televised. The dresses, the wedding dresses, the outfits of the guests, royal and non-royal, on and on and on. And then, of course, I think what makes this wedding particularly poignant is the fact that there is the elephant in the room. There are the ghosts. And, of course, in the background, and everybody's thinking, is going to be Diana, his mother, the person who isn't there. And everyone is going to be so conscious of this, but the fact that, of course, Kate should be wearing Diana's engagement ring. And this just gives almost a mythic quality to the whole thing. And I think that when we look at monarchy and royalty, it is this mythic quality. In all of our lives, there's birth, there's death, there are these great passages in life with marriages, assuming new positions, milestones in life, but yet they just happen. We don't think about them always so very much. William, of course, reminds one looks at him of his mother. And the question is Kate like Diana or is she different? And, of course, the next big ghost, the big question is, will the marriage last? In the late 20th century, as we've mentioned, the early 21st century, with dissolutions of marriage generally, the fact that Prince Charles, Princess Anne, Prince Andrew, Princess Margaret, their marriages all ended disastrously, inevitably the question is, well, what about Kate and William? Well, the truth is, one never knows. There is, of course, always the uncertainty that that accompanies any life. But what they do have going for them is the fact their age. They are within months of one another in terms of age. They are both well educated. This was a college romance, if you bring it right down to its elemental circumstances. And I think that's part 29. They were born in 1982. William will be, actually he's really just 28, I think he'll be 29 in May. It was a college romance, which I think also is part of the appeal of this. Marriage. They both seem to have many interests in common. They have weathered storms, and they obviously know one another very well. So, what about me? Well, what am I going to do? Well, am I going to the wedding? Yes. Do I have a seat in the Abbey? No. So what am I going to do? Well, I think I'm going to stand in the crowd and attend lots of pre-events, post-events, the day of the wedding. My intention is, whether I actually do it, we'll see, is to get up about 4 o'clock in the morning and to troop down to the palace. And I have a little map later on. I'll show you exactly where I plan to stand. What am I wanting to watch? Well, I want to watch the procession going. I want to watch the balcony scene. I want to watch the departure for the honeymoon. I want to see all the comings and goings and all the rest of it. But before we get into the rest of it, I have a few things I'd like to show you here on the screen. And I've been assured by Stuart this is all going to work perfectly, and I have total and utter confidence in Stuart. Books. These were books which came out a number of years ago, and this I thought you'd find them. Look, Christopher Warwick. Here you can see the Queen, Princess Margaret, the Duchess of Kent, Princess Alexandra, the Duchess of Gloucester, Princess Anne. All royal weddings, all of them wearing, of course, tiaras of one sort or another. All absolutely spectacular. And these were this was published in the 1970s, ending, as it does, as you can see, with Princess Anne's wedding from 1973. I should tell you, I went out and bought a color television set specially for the event. I wouldn't admit that to everyone, but I'll tell you because I know you'll keep it a secret and you won't go blabbing it to people. Royal romance, a history of the various royal love affairs, etc. And of course, here you see at the bottom one of the most infamous of the 20th century royal romances and weddings, the Duke and Duchess of Windsor. Edward VIII, who abdicated his throne for the woman he loved, Edward and Mrs. Simpson. And of course, again, their marriage and the marriage and breakup of the marriage of Charles and Diana are two of the great mythic events of the British royal family of the 20th century. And many people in both occasions were of the opinion that both of these events would destroy the royal family. Certainly, both events shook the royal family, but in other ways they simply added to the mythic quality of the of the royal family. This is one of the oldest older items I have in my collection. This is a plate commemorating the wedding of Queen Victoria and Prince Albert in 1840. This is a wedding of one. This is a tin box, actually. It just gives the top of it, commemorating the wedding of one of Queen Victoria's daughters, Princess Louise, with the Marquess of Lorne, who became Canada's Governor General in the 1880s. He founded both the Royal Society of Canada and the National Gallery of Canada. The Queen's wedding day. This post-World War II, 1947, Britain was effectively bankrupt, but at the same time, there was a sense that this had to be a spectacular event. And the publications and the commemorative events, frankly, were a bit on the thin side, but still in all, there they were. This was for the wedding presents. This was the list of wedding gifts given to the Queen and Prince Philip, then Princess Elizabeth and Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten. He had renounced his titles to the Greek and Danish royal families. He was a prince of Denmark and of Greece. And so when the booklet was published, he was still Lieutenant Philip Mountbatten, but the night before the wedding, King George VI created him Duke of Edinburgh, which he remains today. And this is a tin box, the Queen and Prince Philip shortly after their wedding. And they were exuded this youth and good looks and the future of the monarchy. For Princess Anne's wedding, this was, again, another list of wedding presents, St. James Palace. And I should say that there will be all sorts of things which will be issued at that day. There will be, for the public, a program listing all of the events which are going to be happening that day. The day before the wedding, they will print up the official program to be used at the Abbey, and I've already put my name in to get copies of it. apparently, they'll be for sale the day after the wedding, so I'll try to get one. This was a commemorative mug for Princess Anne and her first wedding to Mark Phillips. This cup commemorates Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson. And of course, the most spectacular of the late 20th century royal weddings, Diana and Prince Charles, as they came out of St. Paul's Cathedral. It was absolutely spectacular. And I think we will all recall the day of the wedding when she got out of the carriage and this massive long train came out behind her. And as she went up the stairs with this massive train just flowing behind her, the gasp from the crowd as they saw it. And this is the sort of thing, of course, that one expects on occasions of this sort, I suppose. She was wearing the tiara of the Spencer family tiara. These were some of the commemorative events for Prince Charles and Lady Diana Spencer at the time of their wedding. I just chose them because they were relatively small and easy for me to bring along for it to be photographed. But there were massive amounts of material. I won't say I brought every last item that was available for sale, but I did come close to bankruptcy. Now, for Kate and William, there are publications that are just all over the world. This is the Spanish magazine Hola. This is Hello Canada, Kate and her wedding master plan revealed. The States, People, The Next Princess, why they're ready to wed. A French magazine, Royal Tete, Une Lune de Miel Princière. Then, of course, Royal Scandals and Shockers. And so, of course, nothing sells like a little bit of scandal. So, of course, everybody wants, and so this is the collector's issue. And, you know, every last little misdemeanor of any sort that could possibly be, you know, look at that, the Queen, her secret agony. Poor old Dark Fergie down here, drunken shame. And as we all know, nothing sells like a bit of scandal. And that's the wonderful thing about the royal family. There's everything. There's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's like watching a kaleidoscope of life, I sometimes think. Royal wedding, Prince William and Kate Middleton. And look at this is Tatler. This is a British high-end magazine, and with Kate done up in an Andy Warhol style. And of course, the beginning of the to fashion Kate into an icon. And this is, of course, what it's all about in the end. They become iconic visions, prisms through which we tend to view life. Royals' love story, royal wedding, I mean, the number of books which have come out, etc. And in fact, just a couple of days ago, I picked up these two items. Here we are, Modern Marriage. Well, I don't know how modern that is. But my favorite one, and this really is, now you all have to get this one. It's called Knit Your Own Royal Wedding. And it has knitting instructions. And for, look, how to knit a corgis. I mean, come on. I mean, who can look at this. I mean, so you could knit your whole wedding tableau, et cetera, you know. And you choose the color outfit you think the queen and the rest of them should all be wearing. This is irresistible. How could anybody possibly say no? And ultimately, I think this is the wonderful thing about following royal stuff. It's so much fun. It really is, you know. And, you know, it gives you a wonderful excuse for having a party, and I'm always for that. Now, let's see. What else have we got here to show? Kate, the Making of a Princess, you know. Now, look at this. This is the picture. This was the king and with Princess Elizabeth in the Irish state coach going through, you can see Admiralty Arch, having left the palace, gone up the mall, Admiralty Arch going into Trafalgar Square on their way to Westminster Abbey. And you can see the horse-drawn carriage, the horse guards, the massive crowds, this sense. And, of course, London lends itself to these wonderful imperial pageants and these royal pageants of one sort or another. Now, this is the situation that they're going to do the day of the wedding. Appears that Prince William will be leaving from Clarence House. This is different from 1981. Diana left from Clarence House, but Prince William will leave from Clarence House. It appears that Miss Middleton will leave from the palace. She and her parents apparently are in a hotel in behind the Royal Mews down here. But whether she'll be spending the night before in the palace isn't clear, but it seems she will leave from the palace. They will go down the mall, but they won't go as far as Admiralty Arch. They will turn through Horse Guards Parade, and then they will go down Whitehall into Westminster Abbey, and they will return the same way. Back in 1981, I was here just at the edge of Green Park, right about there, and it was wonderful, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning. And so the question is, well, what was it all about? What did I see while I was there? Well, I thought it was a lot of fun, actually. First of all, you got to see everywhere all the people. So, of course, you know, you get all very chummy and palsy with everybody. And then there was a cleanup crew who came along. And I remember there was one particularly large corporate guy, and as he jumped off a big garbage truck with this massive broom, everybody clapped and cheered. So he waved at us all, you know. I mean, he wasn't missing a moment of excitement of this. Then there were the BBC morning program people who went around interviewing people. Then there were the busloads of soldiers and of guests, and well-dressed people walking out of the palace down toward St. James's Palace, where they would get their buses taking them to St. Paul's Cathedral. Then the honor guard was brought up, and there'd be officers with which looked like giant pincers who would measure exactly the distance amongst all of them for the guard of honor along the processional route. Then at the same time, you watch the palace balcony with the drapery being put along it, the Queen's standard being, the regular standard being taken down, and the huge, massive ceremonial standard being put up in its place. The Queen Mother in her limousine going from Clarence House to the palace, and this gigantic roar, you know, and all you could see was this, it looked like it's sort of a huge arm of blue flowers waving at you, you know, the way she dressed. The procession of the foreign royals leaving from the palace going to St. Paul's. And then the carriages from the Mews going into the palace. And then finally, you realized everything was in order, and the procession of the horse guards came out, and they positioned themselves right here, and everything was in ready. I had my binoculars posed right here on the central arch going into the palace, and suddenly I saw the two outriders, and I said, here she comes. And suddenly out came the Queen's carriage. At this time, in the outer courtyard, the regimental sergeant major, in a massive voice that you could hear right across the plaza, he bellowed out, "God save the Queen." At that point, there was this immense roar from the crowd. There had to have been at least 100, tens of thousands of people there. This a gigantic roar, at which point all of the pigeons on the ground rose like this. You never saw anything like it in your life. And the horse guards here, their horses, all began bolting. And you could tell the struggle they had to keep them under control. At that point, the band began playing "God Save the Queen," and the carriage procession moved around. And the whole crowd, these 10,000, 20,000 people, all started singing "God Save the Queen." The Duke was seated on the left side, the Queen on the right, and the carriage came along this way. And the Queen, it was almost military. She was wearing this blue outfit, but she leaned forward almost in a military way, waving at everybody. And suddenly, this English woman beside me, who had been singing "God Save the Queen," she stopped singing. And I turned and I looked at her, and tears were streaming down her face. And I looked around, and I could see the same thing with other people. And they stopped singing, and this roar went through. I would have to say it was one of the most remarkable occasions of my life. I've never experienced anything of that emotion. Why am I going over? Because watching these things on television is one thing, but being there in a crowd and being part of it is something else again. A few minutes later, the second procession came out with Prince Charles and his brother, Prince Andrew. You would have thought Prince Andrew was the one getting married. He was very cheery, smiling and waving. Prince Charles had this look of abject terror on his face, and in retrospect, I suppose there was some reason for it. Then afterwards, I went down to Canada House. I saw the ceremony on television, and then when they came back from St. Paul's, from Canada House, which is on Trafalgar Square, we could see the procession going by, and it was absolutely spectacular, seeing Charles and Diane in their carriages, and the Queen and Prince Philip with the Spencers going by, with the horse guards. It was quite remarkable. Back to the palace again to see them on the balcony, and then later in that afternoon, I was there again, and when Charles and Diana left by carriage for their honeymoon. It was, what can I say? It was a trip. These are some of the commemorative events. Commemorative objects for William and Catherine, W and C. People call her Kate, but in point of fact, her name is Catherine with a C. This plate. I think it's a ghastly picture of him, but I think it's sort of nice decoration around the side. And remember, nothing succeeds like excess. And here's a type of commemorative mug that is being brought out. And I think that might be, is that the, I think that's the end of it. That's the end of it. So this is, I'm trying to think, so what does one have to say then in conclusion with all of this kind of stuff? Well, what is this wedding all about? What is monarchy about? What is the royalty? Why are we interested in it? Well, I think it has to do with youth, glamour, there's dynasty, there's the constitutional aspect of it, and then it's just an awful lot of fun. It's a good reason. It's fun to go to London. It's fun to watch these things. There is this iconic quality to it all. And, you know, if you're into it, you're into it. If you're not into it, you're not into it. What can I say? I'm into it. I think it's sort of fun. So I enjoy following it. So that's what I have to say about the royal wedding. Are there any questions? Questions, comments, reactions? Yes, sir.
Have you got any wild guess as to how many other Canadians are there who share your enthusiasm and are likely to go to London for this grand event?
Oh, wow. I mean, hard to say, eh? I couldn't even guess. I mean, well, first of all, to go all the way to London, I mean, you know, that's really doing it. But I do know that there are many people who are going over for Canada, from Canada. As far as being interested in it, well, there must be an interest in it. I mean, you can hardly watch the CBC, CTV, or Global News without seeing things. There are all these websites, the commemorative events, the number of people who have complained to me that they don't seem to be able to find any commemorative objects here in Montreal. You know, why? Where do you go to find the mugs and whatnot? You know, I mean, what is wrong with our city? Why can't we find them in Montreal? Have we become so degenerate? You know, it's hard to say. You know, there are levels of interest. Some people are more interested. Some other people are less interested. I couldn't put a numeric figure on that, but lots. Yes, ma'am.
Well, thanks for your talk. Where did you get your flag?
Where did I get my flag? Oh, now let's see. I may have jotted it down here, actually. There's some place in England where you can, but if you contact me, I can tell you where it was exactly. But there's some place in England that does flags. I jotted it down somewhere, but I can't find it just at the moment. But if you contact me, I can tell you about the place. Aren't they terrific? Aren't they great? Don't you love them? And those white sections are really ugly otherwise too, I find. Yes.
Are there any events happening in the area, perhaps by the British Embassy?
Well, we don't have, there's a British consulate, I think, here in Montreal. I honestly don't know. I have a number of friends who are certainly telling me they plan to have early morning parties. So they're inviting people to their place, and they're going to have little champagne parties at their place, inviting people. I know that for the wedding of Charles and Camilla back in 05, I invited a lot of people to my place. I think we're at about a dozen people. And if you're planning to do something, for heaven's sakes, let the media know, because I'm being pestered by CBC, CTV, and Global saying, are you doing something in the morning? Can we come to your house? No. No, you can't. But I had one of the, they're always wanting to come to my house. It gets really boring. Would the rest of you start collecting the stuff and let people know you have them so they'll go to your house instead? But they came in 05, and there were about a dozen of us, and we raised our glasses, and we had a bit of bubbly, and we talked about it, and we did it both en anglais and en français. Oh, yeah, if anybody here is a big monarchist and has a collection, the Radio Canada and TVA are just dying to interview somebody, and we'd be more than happy to just pass your names along. We need people with good frank. My French is, if I know the questions in advance, it's okay, but it's not so good otherwise. Yes, ma'am.
I have two questions.
Yes.
The first one is, are you going to be standing at the same place or try to?
I'm going to try to stand at the same place, yeah. So if the camera goes that way, you know, I mean, look for me.
And second question, when the Prime Minister of Canada refused to go to the wedding, does that create a chill for our relations with the British?
Well, no. Well, it's understood. It's understood. But ordinarily, yes, the Prime Minister should be at a major royal wedding. Not every royal wedding. I mean, not all the royal weddings have this stature. But for the heir to the throne and second in line to the throne, yes, I think it would be considered. Or if it weren't for this reason, it would be considered, yes, a major breach of protocol not to attend, because after all, the Queen is our head of state, so therefore, yes. Sorry, yes, ma'am.
What title, if any, do you think that they will be bestowing on Kate?
Well, it's not a question on Kate. It's what title, if any, Prince William will receive. When they marry, she will officially become Princess William of Wales, which doesn't. The suspicion is that probably just before the wedding or the day of, it will be announced that he has been had bestowed upon him one of the royal dukedoms. So the royal dukedoms at the present are, let's see, there's the Duke of Edinburgh, York, Gloucester, Kent. But, you know, there's Clarence, there's a number of other traditional royal dukedoms which could be, and she will probably become Duchess of whatever. But I'm just speculating at this stage. But it seems unlikely that he will not receive a title. And how it works is she receives, when you marry into the royal family, a woman marrying into the royal family, she takes on the title of her husband. A man marrying into the royal family, however, does not take on the title of his wife. So in the case of Princess Margaret, when she was married, Tony Armstrong Jones became Lord Snowden. On the other hand, when Mark Phillips married Princess Anne, he received nothing at all, so he just remained ordinarily Mr. Mark Phillips. But it seems unlikely that as second in line to throne, that there will not be. In any event, she will become Her Royal Highness, and this is how it will be. The press will start referring to her undoubtedly as Princess Kate or Princess Catherine, but she will not, in fact, be officially Princess Catherine unless the Queen actually bestows this honor upon her as princess. So, you know, it's part of what we have to wait and see. It hasn't been announced yet. That there will be something seems beyond likely. It's obviously going to happen. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
You said they were leaving for their honeymoon after the wedding. Is there a reception that goes
along with it? Oh, yes. After the wedding, they all go back to the palace, and apparently there's going to be a big buffet reception. And then afterwards in the evening, apparently there's going to be something smaller for closer friends of theirs. This being a royal wedding, second in line to the throne, it means that a lot of the invitation list is going to be official. It's going to be politicians, people who hold constitutional positions. For instance, for the realms where Queen is head of state, such as Canada, Australia, New Zealand, you know, officials from their charities and groups with which they're associated. And then apparently a couple of hundred of the guests will fit into the category of friends or people with whom they have personal relationships. But, and so who gets invited afterwards to what becomes a bit of an issue. And presumably some people won't get invited back to the palace for anything, but a lot of them will get invited back for the buffet and then a smaller group than this for informal things after that, you know. Now I'm going to hang around. And if anybody takes a look and says, you know, why don't you come along in for the buffet? Well, I'll think about it for maybe, I don't know, half a second, and then I'll go in, you know. The question is, you know, do I wear a tie just in anticipation of somebody seeing me out there in front of the palace and inviting me in? Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
Are they getting married on a weekday? They're getting married on a weekday. Do the people get a day off?
If the people get a day off,
who pays the population for the day off? How does that work?
I think it's an official holiday, so I think it's like you know. And in fact, I know some people, friends of mine. I said, "Oh, I'm going to be there for the wedding. I'll be able to see you." They said, "Well, we won't be there because, of course, there's Good Friday, then there's Easter Monday, then there's the Friday of the wedding. So this means three public holidays, and so a lot of people are taking this opportunity to go take holidays. You know, I mean, this is it's the same as here, you know, when you have Canada Day and Saint Jean Baptiste Day, you know, if they align right, you know, we've all taken a long holiday to take advantage of that. So the same thing is happening here as well, too, I think. But it is a public holiday. And last night I heard something on the news saying, well, you know, people are a bit blasé about it in Britain, but they will get really into it. They're going to become very enthusiastic. The same thing happened, you know, at the Queen's Golden Jubilee back in 2002. Many people said, oh, nobody's going to be interested, but then they had 2 million people in front of the palace after her, St. Paul's. The Queen Mother's funeral, oh, well, nobody's going to bother coming to it. They had hundreds of thousands of people passing by her coffin in Westminster Hall. Oh, no, it's going to turn into something else again. Yes. Any other questions? Any other comments? Yes, ma'am. Hello, Kathleen.
Yes, it's on a Friday. Are most weddings on a Friday or on the weekends?
Royal weddings attend, well, it varies, I think. I don't think there's a rule one way or the other on it, you know. Easter is so late this year. Obviously, they didn't want it to be before Easter during Lent. And I think they were concerned about the fact that Prince Albert of Monaco was getting married at the beginning of July, so they wanted to have it well before then and for there not to be an overlap. I understand that Prince Albert, I think your microphone is still on, that I understand that Prince Albert and his fiancée, Charlene, from South Africa, will be coming to London for this wedding. So, I'm not sure that there's necessarily any pattern to when which day of the week royal weddings are held, but they tend to be in the middle of the week. They tend to be. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
I'm curious as to what sort of a gift do you give a couple that has everything?
Well, for Charles and Diana, funny you should ask, I went down to the Guild of Canadian Handicrafts and I bought a West Coast Indian Haida copper box designed by Robert Reed, a small box like so, and inside it was lined with green velvet. It was very, very nice, and I got this nice thank you note from one of the equerries, and then I went to St. James's Palace, complete with my little guidebook to the royal presence to see my present, and there amongst all these spectacular things, you know, from Saudi Arabia, there were these spectacular diamond and sapphire pieces of jewelry and whatnot. There was my little tin box. And so I saw the number beside it, so I went whipping through to find it, and there was the number and whatnot. But instead of saying it was from me, they said it was a gift from the Guild of Canadian Handicrafts. Well, was I irritated or was I irritated? Hello. So you know, fame is fleeting. Fame is fleeting. So I think something Canadian. But they've asked specifically for gifts to charities, and I think the big Canadian charity is what is it now? The Life Saving? Is this it? Something, because remember he's into sea rescue, and so I think they're very much into things dealing with veterans and with rescuing people at sea, and that's one of the Queen's major charities as well, too. So I forget what it is, but if you go to the website, you'd be able to find what it is. But I think something that was very Canadian and was handcrafted, but was authentically Canadian would certainly work as well, too. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Your thoughts on why President Obama wasn't invited?
I suspect that they probably scout out in advance whether they're apt to come or whether they're able to come. For Charles and Diana, Mrs. Reagan was there, but not the president. I would think that probably this would be unlikely, and I dare say American presidents to go overseas to royal weddings, because if you go to one royal wedding, you know, then you have to, you know, which ones don't you go to? And remember also, William is not first in line of succession, he's second in line of succession. However, I dare say there will be some senior American personage there. Who it will be, I don't know. The official guest list has not yet been issued. The Daily Mail issued its version of the guest list, but presumably but it's not official. And for security reasons, in the old days, you see, these things used to be issued well in advance. You knew these things, but now for security reasons, same with royal tours, it's much. They're very slow about issuing things, and it's often only at the last moment. So, but there will be somebody senior. Maybe Mrs. Obama will be there. Who knows? You never know. Any questions? How are we for time? Okay, you'll let me know, Mira, when the gong goes. Yes.
Hi. I heard that the guests of the event, or at least the reception afterwards, were given a list of instructions on how to act during the event. As far as even how they should stir their tea or their coffee in a certain fashion.
Really? Oh, I can't imagine. Who got the
I
time
heard it
to
was
do this?
To
No. I think you stir your tea any old way you want to. Presumably anybody who goes will have an idea about royal etiquette. It's pretty simple. You don't spoken unless spoken to, and you know, you meet the Queen, it's Her Majesty, and thereafter it's ma'am, you know. You bow and you curtsy. You're super polite. Yeah, you're super polite. Yeah, and you don't touch her. You don't touch her. She can touch you, but you don't touch her. Yes, ma'am.
It goes along with the question she just asked, with the way they have to behave and stuff. They're going to have, I think, one of those bachelor's party before or for the...
I think they've already had one for William. Yeah, that was about a week or so over. But they really kept that under wraps. And they and pushed the palace, admitted, yes, it happened. No, we have nothing to release. We have no news to release about it, you know. So much of their life is lived in public, so therefore there is a sense that some things should be lived in private. And one of the ways in which the royal family judges its friends is by their willingness to keep their mouth shut and to not blab these details. But an enormous amount still gets out just the same. They live in a small village populated by about 2,000 people. These are friends, servants, advisors, people who are close to them. Inevitably, a certain amount seeps out. But an awful lot doesn't seep out as well, too. But this is so of people. I mean, you know, this surrounds Prime Minister Harper, the American president, the Pope, and all the rest of it. So, you know, people in these positions are always like this. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about the Prince of Wales, about the term of the Prince of Wales.
The Prince of Wales.
Years, yes.
That's right.
Edward VII, I know, would seem to be the longest reigning Prince of Wales. Is that true?
Yes, because I think he became Prince of Wales when at the time of his birth, whereas Prince Charles was only created Prince of Wales when he was about 10 or 11 years old, I think, yes.
But maybe I have the wrong number. Queen Victoria's son, I heard.
Queen Victoria's son, that's right.
Is that right. The right one?
Yeah, that's right.
He was the oldest playboy in Europe, he said, because he went on for so many years as Prince of Wales.
That's right. Yeah. But Prince Charles is going to be Prince of Wales longer than...
Do you think he'll come to the throne?
If he's alive, yes. Yeah. But you take a look at his face. I mean, first of all, he's lived a hard life in some ways in that he's had some bad falls playing polo. Plus, you can tell looking at his face, this is a man who's been through a great deal of psychological stress and strain in his life. Will he outlive the Queen? Now, people ask, well, how long will the Queen live? Well, you take a look at the Queen and the Queen Mother. The Queen is not going to live to be 102 like her mother, because you can just see looking at her. The stress and strain of being the reigning monarch is very different from having been Queen Consort or Queen Mother. But one assumes that Prince Charles will become king. How long his reign will be, it's hard to say. With medical science today, you know, I mean, hey, we all might live to quite ancient ages. On the other hand, maybe we won't, and who knows with him. On the other hand, remember, you know, he's really into all this health food fatty stuff, and, you know, he... I don't know, does all these green things. Oh, he'll probably live a long time. Any other questions? Any other comments? Well, in that case, it's been wonderful. Thank you all very much. Enjoy the royal wedding.